Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
What's up, everybody? This is Xander. We got the Sporting Edge going on. I'm here with my main man, Bubba. And Bubba, how you doing this week?
I'm doing great, Xander. Interesting week in sports. A lot of things going on. And, of course, football starts tomorrow. So what's going on with you?
Not much. I mean, exciting news. We're going to have football every week until February from now on. And, you know, we got to wait about a month and a half till regular season starts. But we get started off with the Hall of Fame game. We got 4 weeks of preseason. You know, a lot of stuff going on in the NFL, but I first wanted to go over the PGA Championship with you, last major of the year. I think probably the least exciting out of all the four majors, but at the same time, it is one of the majors, so it's still more exciting than any other tournament. And, you know, I watched all 4 days. This is the first time all year I got to see all 4 days of a tournament, and pretty damn good tournament, I must say. Jimmy Walker, very professional. I thought he was going to fold on Sunday, and he just didn't. He kept up, played a great final round, and, you know, he won 14 under, 3 under on the last day. And, I mean, the guy never faltered, played the back nine perfectly. I mean, he had Jason Day nipping on his heels all day.
Yeah.
Pun intended. And he just came away with the win. I thought it was very impressive, and I wanted to get your thoughts. You know, what'd you think about Day? You know, there wasn't anybody too close. Summer Hayes finished at 10 under. Brandon Grace, Brooks Koepka at 9 under.
I thought it was an okay tournament, but again, as I said before, you know, the PGA to me is like a non-event tournament. I mean, I know it's a major, and, you know, it's a major really because the PGA professionals that work at the golf courses get to play, or they get to try to qualify for this, so that makes it a little bit more exciting. But of course, I'm looking forward to the Ryder Cup. You know, every other year when we have the Ryder Cup, that's a much more fun thing to watch, because now you got, you know, the battle of the countries, and you've got one-on-one matches. But the PGA was okay. I mean, again, it wasn't, not a big fan, so it's hard for me to get real excited about it.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't too exciting, but, you know, I thought the last day, I actually have a great story. So I was watching with a friend, and, you know, we wanted a little action on the last day. So at the time, Jason Day was 2 strokes back at Jimmy Walker. So we put $60 on him, money line. He was about, I think, plus 230, something in that area. And so we were watching the back nine just feverishly on the couch. You know, every putt, we're just yelling at the TV. And Jason Day, it was a frustrating back nine because the guy just could not make a birdie. I mean, he was putting great. I mean, because, you know, when you're putting from 50 feet away, I mean, a two-putt, I mean, you'll take that any day. And that's exactly what he did. And when he got to 18 and sunk that eagle putt, I mean, we almost broke the TV. We were yelling so loud. And Jimmy Walker, I mean, it was such a huge advantage, I think, for him playing behind Day, because he didn't have to make any moves that he wasn't sure about. I mean, he saw what Day was doing. You know, he saw if Day parred a hole, he could just play it safe. And that's exactly what he did. And the putt for Day on 17 lipped out, and the putt for Walker on 17 lipped in. So it was just that kind of day. Jason Day couldn't really get anything going until 18 when he hit that eagle. But, you know, Jimmy Walker was able to par that hole pretty easily. He did hit that 3-wood into the rough. But, And we actually found out about 30 minutes later that this particular bookie we were betting with did not take live bets. So it was the lowest of lows to a pretty big high getting that money back. But we came as close as we possibly could to winning without actually winning when Day hit that eagle putt. So, you know, it was exciting last couple holes on that side of it. But overall, very happy for Jimmy Walker. He's a very professional guy. Got up to 10 in the world a couple years ago, and I think he's making his way back up. A very good golfer. Yeah, I think we're going to move on, though. Talk a little NBA. Russell Westbrook, is this guy ready to handle the spotlight in OKC? What are your thoughts, Bub?
Well, I mean, he's always had the spotlight. The question is, can he win without it?
He hasn't really had the spotlight with Kevin Durant there, has he?
Well, but no, but Russell Westbrook, listen, even in our draft, I mean, you know, he was the number one pick every year, basically, when he was healthy. The question is will he be able to perform at his high level unless he gets a real star? You know, one of the things about having a great star with you, and that was, you know, Michael Jordan will tell you that, of having guys around you that can play, is that it helps you really develop your own ability. So will Russell Westbrook really be able to be as good as he's been when he had a Kevin Durant with him? You know, as you've seen, you saw it with Kobe, when he lost his stars around him, he wasn't as good as he was before. Yes, he was older, but again, things happen. You need that one or two more guys to really make you the guy. And we'll see if Westbrook is really that great, or was it Kevin Durant's presence that helped make him even better? I mean, the guy, I think he was the last guy who had averaged 21, 10, and 5. You know, more games than anybody in the season. So I think that's the bigger story.
Yeah, you know, and there's been talk about how Kevin Durant left the Thunder, and specifically Westbrook. Apparently he just sent him a text. You know, it seems like there's a little bad blood there, and I don't know if their relationship will never be the same, especially after Kevin Durant leaves like that. Kind of immaterial to me, though. I mean, he made a decision. He's already at Golden State. But I'm excited to see Westbrook this year. I mean, one thing you can't take away from the guy is he's a freaking competitor. I mean, he's all over the court. And, yeah, you know, people call him a stat machine. You know, maybe he can't win on his own. But I'm excited to watch whatever he puts out on the court.
He is a stat machine. He's a great player. There's nothing wrong with his ability to play the game. My question is can he win without Kevin Westbrook, without Kevin Durant? And is he as good of a stat machine as that? He is by far one of the best all-around players, rebounding the whole deal. He does it all. I can't take anything away from him. I think he's great. But I want to see if he's as great as he's appeared, or if he's maybe just a touch below.
Right, and I think that'll be interesting. It'll be real interesting to watch, because maybe, I think there's a possibility that maybe he plays even better. I mean, maybe he is the equal superstar that Kevin Durant is, but we just never really got to see it. But, you know, regardless, you know, Oklahoma City, I don't think they're going to be great, but they do have a chance, and, you know, maybe what Russell Westbrook just elevates his game that much more.
I got to interrupt you for 1 minute here, though. I will say this from a fan's perspective. Russell Westbrook always went significantly higher in the fantasy drafts than Kevin Durant, so he's already recognized as a superstar, because he is the guy that gets drafted by the fans playing the fantasy game. So I have to say that...
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where we have a difference in fantasy sports and real sports. I mean, I think, you know, I think if you ask anybody, I'd say 9 out of 10 people, if you ask, you know, who's the best player on the Thunder, who's taking that last shot, I think people would say Kevin Durant. That's just my opinion. I think he was always recognized as, you know, maybe they're both superstars, but I think Kevin Durant is recognized as the bigger superstar. He was there first. You know, probably the most effective scorer in the league. I mean, maybe besides Steph Curry. But, you know, regardless, I think it'll be fun to watch Russell Westbrook this year. I mean, you know, I think the closest thing we've come to this is when Scottie Pippen took over the Bulls, when Jordan left for a couple years.
Yeah, but he got a migraine headache in the biggest game of the year. But it'll be more fun to watch Kevin Durant and Golden State go 82-0 next year.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you see the thing about the simulation says they're going to win 83 games out of 82. I don't know how the freaking simulation came up with that, but regardless, I mean, they're going to be fun to watch as well, and we'll see if anybody can take them down. You know, they're going to be maybe the best team on paper that this league has ever seen, but it's all the time we have for the Sporting Edge right now. If you miss a show, find us on libertytalk.fm. We'll be back after the break. We're going to talk about some baseball and Louisville basketball. What's up, everybody? We're back. I'm here with Bubba. And Bubba, I said we were going to talk about Louisville basketball. You know, we're not even really close to college basketball, but, you know, there's a big story out on CBS Sports that You know, they're still getting some big-time recruits. And even after that huge scandal got uncovered last year about, you know, the prostitution. And
well, they got private hookers on the payroll, too, though. So, listen, there's one thing about I know about recruiting, and I've watched it for years. You know, they get caught, and it's always, you know, it's like everything else in life. It's always the first time we ever did that, and we're going to come clean. In the meantime, they got hookers in the closets waiting, and they've got all the perks. Nothing ever goes away. It only goes away for 5 minutes when they get caught, and then it goes right back to the same thing. It's the same as the PEDs. All the crap continues to go on because nobody thinks you're ever going to get caught, so they continue to do it. So I'm sure they have plenty of stash waiting, and either it's cars or cash or whatever, but there's more there, as always.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's always more. But my main point I wanted to talk about was, you know, I really don't think that a story like this would affect recruiting very much, unless we're talking about postseason bans, which we already had one for Louisville. But, I mean, you know, if you're a high school player coming on, I mean, who really cares about this past scandal? You know, if you're not getting a postseason ban, you're playing for one of the best coaches in the history of the game, you're playing for a great school. I mean, it doesn't really matter. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. I'm not surprised at all that Louisville is, you know, garnering some top recruits. I mean, I think at the end of the day, these scandals sometimes they end up affecting, you know, guys who weren't even involved. I mean, I think a perfect example is Penn State. I mean, after all that got discovered, I don't remember how, was it 3 or 4 years ago the postseason ban started?
Yeah, but the nice thing they did, the nice thing the NCAA does do, though, and they don't do many good things, but one of the good things they do is you did have a chance to leave Penn State if you chose.
Right, but my point was that, you know, maybe a senior for that team who had done nothing wrong, I mean, just played 3 years, is going into his last year, this gets undressed in the eyes of the public and the NCAA. You know, you get a postseason ban, and you know, yeah, you can transfer, but if you're a guy who's played 3 years for a program, all of a sudden the program gets hit with this postseason ban, and it's just, I think it's disheartening for a player like that who really had nothing to do with this scandal that started 40 years ago. They're the ones who get penalized. So I think,
well, and that's the inequity of NCAA sports. That's the inequity of the entire NCAA is broken as it sits today. And there it is. You're 100% right. The fair and equitable thing is not to penalize the guys that are there. There has to be a way to penalize the actual people that were involved. Now, obviously, the players we saw with Reggie Bush, there's nothing you can do. I mean, it took away his Heisman, but there's nothing you can do to the players, but you have to somehow penalize the coach. But to penalize the program and penalize guys that are there that had nothing to do with it, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. I think that's good. But that is where, in my opinion, the whole model of the NCAA is broken down.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, you know, players that were involved in this scandal, I mean, you know, half of them, they're already moved on to the NBA. I mean, that's, you know, what are you going to look back? I mean, you can't do anything to them after that, and not that you should. I mean, it's not, you know, what they did maybe wasn't up to NCAA par, but it's not really up to them. You know, it's up to the people who are running the program. But, I mean, you look back at guys, they're already in the NBA, and, you know, and the thing with Reggie Bush, I mean, you know, he's, You can take away his trophy, but you can't penalize. I mean, the guy's been in the NFL.
Yeah,
for
the millions of dollars that he got and he made. You know, listen, yeah. The really only way to really do it is you have to have a severe financial penalty to the school and a severe financial penalty to the coach, which they'd have to sign up for, because when they leave a program, if they leave back, you know, some dirty laundry, they should have the recourse to go back and get the money. There's nothing you can do about the players. Why penalize innocent young, you know, 18-year-old kids or even the kids that have been in the program that have nothing to do with it? That, to me, you're right. It makes absolutely no sense.
Right. And about Reggie Bush, I thought that was bullshit how they took away his trophy, you know, 10 years after his time at USC. I hated it.
No, I mean, I hate it, too. I mean, again, this is an age-old argument in all sports. It goes to the PED use in Major League Baseball. It goes to the recruiting violations in football. I mean, there's always something surrounding somebody. And at the end of the day, did it have a major effect on the game? No, it did not.
Yeah, that's my thing with Reggie Bush. You know, I understand the steroid argument in baseball. I mean, that's why you see a lot of guys aren't making the Hall of Fame ballot or not being voted enough. You know, a guy like Rafael Palmeiro, 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, sounds like a surefire Hall of Famer. The steroid issue, he's not even on the ballot anymore. But for a thing like Reggie Bush, yeah, he did something illegal. He took some money, but nothing that affected the play on the field. I mean, he was the best player by far in college football, whenever it was back in 2005. And for them to go and take away that, I mean, I think it's crap. Kind of off topic, but I thought it was bullshit.
But it's important. It was good. It was a good argument.
Yeah. So Jonathan Lucroy, we bashed him last week. A lot of people bashed him for not going to the Cleveland Indians, and I think we all had our facts wrong, and it turns out that we absolutely did. Jonathan Lucroy, turns out, had a very good reason for not going to the Indians, and he spelled that out in an interview a couple days ago. And basically what happened was he was not guaranteed to be the starting catcher the next year on the Indians. So he, along with his agent, agreed that it'd be best if he did not go there in pursuit of trying to get a big contract the next year when he becomes a free agent to be a starting catcher somewhere. You know, what were your thoughts on that, Bub?
I mean, again, I said that he was a pussy for not going, and how could you not want to go to a team that's going to win the World, have a chance to win the World Series? And then I found out the real facts, and, you know, I'm with him. Let's face facts. They all want to win. But the one thing that these guys have, most of them, that you're really good, you've got one or two big contracts in you. And you know what? They're entitled to get paid, and you know what? Let him get paid first, and, you know, after he gets paid, then he can go play for a team for less money, if that's the case. But to go to a team and take a chance not to be a starter and then not get that big contract, I agree. Listen, I agree with him. I shunned him, and I slapped him around, but at the end of the day, he is 100% right because, again, it is still a business. And the business brings money, and you have to get the money before anything else. And so I agree with him 100%.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, everybody came out, but we just didn't know all the details. And I mean, Jonathan Lucroy is making almost $6 million next year, which is basically nothing in today's MLB for a player of his caliber. He's going to sign probably one big contract when he's 31 years old, and that'll probably be his last big one. And I mean, you know, regardless of what you think, you know that. These players, this is their job. It is a business. These guys don't work till they're 65. You know, some of them play maybe till they're 40. Most of them maybe till they're 32 or 33. I mean, this is money that he's got to use to take care of his family for the rest of his life. And he saw an opportunity that wasn't going to be beneficial for him down the road. Because if he goes to Cleveland, ends up not starting next year, playing first base, you know, being a designated hitter, I mean, the guy's a catcher. I mean, he came out and said, I'm a catcher. I've been catching since I was 12 years old. I love being behind the plate. You know, I'm not changing positions for anybody. I don't care who it is. So I agree with him totally on this. You know, Yan Gomes, I never thought was a very good catcher. I don't know why Cleveland would do this. He's only a year younger than Lucroy.
Maybe Cleveland was being honest.
They were being honest.
Maybe we give them a little credit for being honest with the guy and letting him not make the bad decision of coming there. You know, it's the same as, you know, I don't want to get off topic here, but it was the same as, you know, Rhea got traded to Miami. And then he got hurt in his first three innings of pitching, and they took him out. And San Diego took him back, which was another, in my eyes, those are two things that might have been done in very good faith. The San Diego was definitely done in good faith, but maybe the Cleveland was being honest and saying, hey, I mean, even though they probably knew, I think that Cleveland might not have wanted to rock the boat with the team. Like, maybe everybody loves Yan Gomes. They didn't want to say, even though they knew maybe in their mind he's going to be the starter, they had to say to him outright, so they didn't try to mess up the team chemistry. Maybe. Again, there's a lot of reasons, but at least I think they were honest with him, and he was able to make a decision that is better for him and his family, in which I agree.
Yeah, and you know, it's a big thing. We don't see it too often, a catcher being moved at the deadline. I mean, catcher, you could make an argument, and a very good one. It's the most important position on the team. It's a big shakeup for a team that is, you know, number one in the league and in their division, and at the time was rolling. Yan Gomes still injured, hitting about 170 this year, but I do appreciate Cleveland giving Lucroy the honest truth, and he ends up going to the Rangers. He actually hit his first bomb the other day.
I think he was better off too. I think the Rangers have a better shot, in my opinion, than Cleveland. And but anyways, I think that works out well, and I think it worked out better for him. And besides, he could not say no to Texas. That was not on his no trade list.
Right. So he had no choice there. But like you said, ended up working out better. You think it's going to work out better? You know, Danny Salazar goes on the DL the other day, so maybe it will be a lot better in the near future. That's all the time we have for the Sporting Edge right now. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm, and we'll be back after the break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge. I'm with Bubba here. Padres chairman Ron Fowler recently made some headlines calling his team miserable failures following their 20-33 start to the season, ripping Matt Kemp for basically being a bum, which he is. But, you know, to come out and say this publicly, I think this kind of represents the Padres as a whole, just being a complete failure of an organization over the past 10 years or so.
I agree with that. I mean, look, they're a bad organization. They did try to go for it last year, and they failed miserably. And, of course, since he called Kemp a loser, Kemp is now with the Atlanta Braves. And God knows why that trade was made, but I guess Atlanta's looking for some headline guys for their new stadium. But the Padres have been playing better. But at the end of the day, they did stink. And, I mean, I think they got shut out the first three games of the year. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't really want to talk much more about the Padres, but, I mean, kind of embarrassing. I know they went for it last year and absolutely awful. I don't think any of those guys are left that they brought on except, you know, Will Myers, who is, I'm pretty sure it was homegrown. Don't quote me on it, but I mean, they're an embarrassment, and those All-Star game jerseys were butt ugly. And, you know, enough about the Padres for now. But NFL Hall of Fame inductions coming up. We've got a big class, and it's being headed by Brett Favre. Favre, one of the most exciting players, I think, that I've ever seen play the game of football. Really saw him near the end of his career. I didn't really watch too much during his heyday with the Packers, but, you know, I think he's going to be remembered as, you know, one of the biggest risk takers and one of the biggest gunslingers of all time.
No, I agree. Listen, he was a great player. I mean, he did a lot of good stuff. He played in a lot of tough conditions, and, of course, he was really drafted by Atlanta and ended up in Green Bay, and you know, he turned out to be, you know, Dan Machuski got injured, and came Brett Favre, and he pipped him, and that was it. And Brett Favre was the quarterback, and obviously well-deserving, and one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game. I can say that. And a tough guy, and always seemed to manage to do the right thing. So, yeah, very good.
Yeah, and then a couple other guys. We got Kevin Green, Tony Dungy, Marvin Harrison, Orlando Pace. We also got Ken Stabler being inducted posthumously, and Dick Stanfill, and Eddie DeBartolo Jr. I mean, out of all those guys, I could say, you know, I really only watched Marvin Harrison, and man, was he fun to watch with Reggie Wayne and Peyton Manning for, you know, 6 or 7 years in a row with the Colts. I mean, I think that might go down, I think, as one of the top five duos of all time, Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison.
It might, and I'll tell you, though, just a word on Kenny Stabler. He deserved to be in long ago. And, you know, they didn't like him. He was a little bit of a wild card. You know, back in those days, they did a little bit more partying. And they do a lot of partying now, but there they got away with it. Let's put it that way. And he was a wild man, but he was a great quarterback and really ran those wild teams of the Raiders. And I'm sorry that he's getting in passionately, because I think he deserved to be in long, long ago. So, you know, and DeBartolo was a great guy in the game. And, you know, he's taken – and his father, you know, they had some bad ties, so they've taken some bad stuff, but I'm glad he's getting into, because certainly the San Francisco 49ers were revolutionary a lot of things that they did.
Right. And, you know, you heard anything about the Bennett brothers recently? just basically bashing anybody who they say fit in the NFL?
I haven't seen it. No, what's going on?
Well, I mean, you know, the Bennett brother, Michael Bennett is...
And Michael Martellus.
Right. Michael Bennett is one of the most outspoken players in the league today, and he, you know, he came on with his brother. They did an interview basically ripping anybody in sight, and the major brunt of that was received by Jay Cutler, calling him the worst quarterback in the NFL. Martellus Bennett saying, you know, I'd be open, and he'd throw in a double coverage. You know, listen, I think Michael Bennett is a great player. I don't like he's a huge loudmouth. I don't really like him that much, but he is a great edge pass rusher, probably one of the best in the league for the Seattle Seahawks, Super Bowl champion. Can't say much about him. Martellus Bennett stinks.
But he's right. He's right about Jay Cutler, though. He may stink, but he is right about Jay Cutler.
You know what? He might be right, but, I mean, you know, going after him, ripping him like this, you know, and I thought Jay Cutler had the perfect response. He says, you know, most tight ends think they're always open, and he didn't really say too much about it. I respect him for that. I mean, what is he going to say to Martellus Bennett now? He's going to the Patriots. But, you know, Martellus Bennett, I think, has been an underachiever his entire career. He's never caught over 6 touchdowns in a season. He's never had 1,000 yards receiving. I know that he's, you know, been the 8th best fantasy tight end for the past 4 years, but past Gronk, Jimmy Graham, and a couple others that have had a couple good years, I mean, they're all pretty below average in my opinion. And Martellus Bennett, I think he's overrated. I thought he underperformed with the Cowboys. I thought he underperformed with the Bears. And I think he should just shut his mouth and play football, because, you know, I think he's a big underachiever so far.
Well, I don't disagree with that. But, you know, again, playing for Jay Cutler, it's hard to figure if you're ever going to get the best out of it. But I do not disagree at all with him being big mouth, and he should keep his mouth shut, which most athletes should, because all they do when they open their mouth is they create trouble and cause a lot of other issues. So I do agree with that, and I have no issue with him keeping his mouth shut, which I think he should.
Yeah, I mean, he actually did have the best season of his career this past year, so maybe you throw a little love the guy's way. But, you know, the Bennett brothers, more Michael notoriously being known for opening their mouths. And Michael Bennett actually got kicked out of Seahawks practice the other day. I guess there was a skirmish, and then he continued it post-practice and whatnot. But very outspoken guy. Very good player, though. So we'll see if, you know, he plays a big part in the Seahawks this year. I think he will. I think it's going to be interesting to see that team without Marshawn Lynch. I mean, I think when you think about the Seahawks the past 5 or 6 years, I mean, Marshawn Lynch is the first guy that comes to my mind, and they've been a ground and pound, play great defense. I think it'll be interesting. You know, Russell Wilson, their backup quarterback situation is pretty brutal, and it's going to be interesting to see how the transition works at running back. I mean, Thomas Rawls looked unbelievable last year for a few weeks and then had a major ankle injury. So you never really know how guys are going to come back from that. But I think the Seahawks are going to be interesting. I don't think they're going to be as dominant as they were a couple years ago. But, you know, I think it's going to be a very interesting playoffs this year. And we'll see if teams like the Panthers, the Broncos can come back. I mean, the Broncos, new quarterback. Is it going to be Mark Sanchez?
Mark Sanchez, my God, help me. But, yeah, listen, maybe Mark, you know, some guys will blossom late, but some guys always stay in the same position, and they just can't get it done. And I'm going to guess that Mark Sanchez is one of those. I mean, he's had some good seasons, but, you know, him, like we talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick last week, you know, some guys just can't get it done. And, you know, Mark Sanchez
Hold up.
Yeah,
Mark Sanchez has been to 2 AFC championship games.
I said he's done some good things, but he's always managed to find a way to lose those games by the key interception. And again, I'm not saying taking away from him. I'm just saying that some guys aren't destined to get there, and they make the key mistake. And, you know, listen, one thing about football, it's a short season, 16 games, and, you know, a lot can happen. But, you know, there are certain guys, look, when you talk about great quarterbacks, or even good quarterbacks, you don't put Mark Sanchez in that list.
I don't, but I think this situation just smells so much like it did with the Jets. I mean, he was a very young quarterback. I think it was his rookie year, maybe his second or third year, playing for a great defense in the Jets. They were, you know, probably the best defense in the league, and, you know, he didn't really do much more than being a game manager. But they did get to the AFC Championship game, and if you remember the Broncos this year, I mean, Peyton Manning in name, but not by player in these playoffs. They ended up winning the Super Bowl. They actually kicked the crap out of the Panthers in the Super Bowl. So, you know, if Mark Sanchez can be maybe a game manager, maybe just a little bit more, I mean, this team could easily make it back. I mean, the defense is the key. We've always said that, and it proved true last year. You know, Von Miller in the Super Bowl was unstoppable, you know, absolutely destroyed Cam Newton.
Run the ball and stop the ball, and you're going to be in. Look at the Carolina Panthers. They had such a terrible defense, offense. I mean, they had everybody was injured by the time they got there. And speaking of Carolina, just a question. Do you think that, I mean, Cam Newton is ranked in fantasy rankings as the number one quarterback. Are you in agreement with that?
No, I'm not. It's very up for debate. I don't think I would take him number one. First of all, I think Aaron Rodgers is still the best quarterback in this league. I know he had an off year last year. I think he's still the best. And, you know, Cam Newton, for me, I know he's getting Kelvin Benjamin back. The one thing I worry about is just the fact that he runs the ball a lot. And I know he's never really had injury problems in the NFL. I have to give him a lot of credit for that. You know, he's a much bigger running quarterback than we've ever seen. But I think Aaron Rodgers gives you a higher floor. And maybe about a little lower ceiling, I guess, on a week-to-week basis if Cam Newton has 70 yards rushing and two touchdowns along with a couple hundred yards passing and a couple touchdowns. I just don't like the security as much. And like I said, Kelvin Benjamin is coming back, and that is very big for them. But I wouldn't put him at number one, would you?
No, I don't put him at number one either, but it is interesting. His injury was when he got hit in a pickup truck after he had a little bit of a rib injury and he would have played, but he had an accident in his car. That's the thing that kept him out the longest. That was interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, it really is amazing. The guy, you know, a lot of people wonder, the running quarterback in the NFL, it's not really a thing. Cam Newton has proved that wrong, but the fact is he is the biggest. He is bigger than
most. Russell from Seattle has also proved it pretty good.
There is another one. There we go. So there's two of them. So we got two running quarterbacks. They're both – they don't have – one has a Super Bowl ring, one doesn't. Cam Newton will look to get one this year. We'll be back after this segment with some talk about the MLB big trade deadline. You know where to find us if you miss a show, libertytalk.fm, and we'll see you after the break. What's up, everybody? I'm back here with Bubba. We're going to talk about the MLB trade deadline. We got some winners and we got some losers. You know, I think a big winner, although they did not get Jonathan Lucroy, the Cleveland Indians getting Andrew Miller, who is statistically proven to have been one of the best pitchers, you know, value-wise, in the league the past 4 years. What'd you think about it?
I thought they did well, Cleveland. I thought it was interesting, though. The first time they brought him out, it was a blowout game. They were getting blown out, and the first guy he pitched to, first pitch of the home run. But, I mean, he's going to be great, and I was really obviously hoping the Cubs would get him. I thought that the Cubs would actually get Chapman and Miller. But I think it's a great trade for Cleveland. I think that the Carrasco thing's a problem, though, so I think they've got some issues they're dealing with right now.
Right, and Andrew Miller, it was funny giving up a home run on the first pitch, but I mean, I think he's a great pitcher. It's, you know, insane strikeout rate. It's about 40% over the past 3 or 4 years. And I think another winner, we've talked about him a lot because they're the hometown team, but the Cubs, getting Chapin, you know, like we weren't the biggest fan of it, but I mean, the guy has also been one of the top relievers in the game.
I blew his favor ready for the Cubbies, though. Tra-la-tra. You know what? They did okay, but I thought, they picked up a lot of pitching. And I have no issue with that. I think that's great. I thought actually, in my opinion, maybe the Texas Rangers might have had the best pickup.
Texas, yeah. I mean, Lucroy is a huge pickup for them. They also got Carlos Beltran, who at almost 40 years old is having, I think, one of the better years of his career.
And he's one of the biggest winners ever. I mean, he's another guy. And by the way, I got to go back. I'm sorry. I got things all in my mind, but I don't understand how Cleveland and you see once they sent Uribe down, okay, Juan Uribe. Think what you want. He's every team he's played with is going to the playoffs. He's got a lot of World Series rings, but yet they sent him down. And the day they sent him down, they went and lost three in a row. You know, and I'm just saying. There's a lot to say about chemistry and attitude with guys, and you know, the guys they love them in the clubhouse.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see the next couple of weeks how they play. I mean, they just lose a series to the Twins and got, you know, more or less slaughtered the first three games. You know, Rangers did well on offense. I do think they needed to pick up a starter, though. They didn't get one. You know, they got Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish, but still a couple key injuries there.
But Griffin's pitching pretty good. I think they'll be okay. I do like him, and I think that I think the biggest loser, your team, the Houston Astros. They didn't do anything, and I think they're starting to pay for it. McCullers is now on the DL, and after that hot streak, which you called, they've now have gotten awfully cold.
Yeah, I mean, Houston didn't do much of anything. And McCullers, I mean, that guy's got some nasty stuff. He's getting sent down. They're now 6.5 games back after only being 3 last week. So, like I said, I can't count him out. But, I mean, I think losing McCullers is a big deal. I mean, they got Jose Altuve is probably playing some of the best baseball in the National League right now. I think he's on pace to win an MVP. Carlos Correa is having an okay season. Not great, but, I mean, they better pick it up fast because, you know, this isn't 3 months ago when they were 8 games back. I mean, we got a couple months left here in the season. They're 2-8 in their last 10. They definitely need to pick it up. And I want to talk one more team with the trade deadline. I thought the Yankees, I thought they had an unbelievable deadline. This was one of the first times, I think, you know, almost in the history of the Yankees that they were sellers at the deadline. And they got back a lot of talent. And I think it was an unfamiliar place for Brian Cashman because, I mean, this team has always, they've always been buying at the deadline, trying to get that World Series. I mean, back in 09, they got Teixeira, Burnett, and they did win the World Series. So I think the stuff they got back in a couple years, I think the Yankees are going to be back in contention.
Well, they say that they might have gotten like eight top 100 prospects. I mean, some ridiculous number of great prospects, which means that they do some work in the offseason. I mean, we know they're dumping Rodriguez. They're going to eat that $21 million and get rid of him. Teixeira's retiring after a pretty good career. They're going to cut. They'll get rid of Headley, and they've got a good nucleus. I mean, they've got Severino, who's all of a sudden pitched pretty well, and a couple other guys coming back. And with all those prospects, if they get some good free agents over the winter, they may be trading those prospects next year to get, you know, back right to the race. Because unfortunately, the Yankees are not a team that can be like the Astros or the Cubs and go into a 5-year plan. They got to be in like a 5-month plan to be ready to go.
Right. It's a little bit different in New York, and also the Nationals getting Mark Melanson, I thought it was huge. I mean, Jonathan Papelbon stinks now. And Mark Melanson, not flashy at all. I don't think he throws above 93, but has been one of the best closers in the league for the past 3 years. I thought that was a big deal for them. I think every great team, you need a guy you can give the ball to in the ninth. And Mark Melanson for the Pittsburgh Pirates these past 3 years has been that guy. He's been great. So I look forward. I think the Nationals they're definitely playoff bound, and we'll see if they can make some noise. You know, but let's talk about the Blue Jays. Aaron Sanchez, there's been talk about, you know, we're moving him to the bullpen. When are we going to shut him down? It looks like they're going to move to a 6-man rotation. I thought this is the best possible thing. Back in 2012, we had the Steven Strasburg saga where they shut him down, 98-win season. They ended up not winning the World Series. They haven't won one since. And that's something maybe you look back as a team, it could be haunting. And I think this is a good move for the Blue Jays because I think right now, I think they might have the best chance to win the AL East.
I think they're playing well, and I think they did well at the trading deadline. They picked up some guys they need. And you know what? It's like somebody I heard someone in MLB talking. You know, what do you say to the rest of your players? You're going to shut down your best pitcher who's 11-1 and certainly a favorite for the Cy Young. So, you know, what do you say to the rest of your guys? Well, we're going to wait for 5 years from now? I mean, the guy's a pitcher. Let him pitch, and, you know, he'll stretch him out. And if he needs a rest, I'll give him a rest. That's all.
Right, and I completely agree with that. You know, Baltimore, they picked up Wade Miley. They actually did get into some trade talks. I don't think they did enough. And, I mean, Boston got Drew Pomerantz, but, I mean, they're struggling. They're only 10 games over 500. I mean, this team is the scariest lineup in the league. But, you know, they don't have great pitching. And, you know, it's proven throughout this year. They're, you know, about 60-50 right now. They haven't been great, and I think the Blue Jays, they do have the best chance to win the AL East.
Are the Tigers going to run down the Indians? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. They 3 games back right now. They were on an 8-game win streak. Jordan Zimmermann comes off the DL and gets shelled in 2 innings.
And he's going back. He might be going back on the DL.
He's going back down. You know, that sucks for them. I think they need Jordan Zimmermann down the stretch if they want to compete with Cleveland. You know, he started off the year great, 5-0, had a sub .8 ERA, I think, and came out this past week, and you could see he just didn't have it. I mean, he's a guy 92, 93, was getting up to maybe 90, was hovering around 89. Definitely something wrong with him. Wasn't feeling right, and now he gets sent back down. Hopefully, he can get up pretty quickly, but, you know, that's what happens. These guys are such big competitors. Sometimes you come back, you know, just a little bit early, and it ends up costing you. So hopefully Jordan Zimmermann isn't on the shelf for too long. But another guy who's on the shelf now, Yoenis Cespedes. And not only is he on the shelf, but, you know, he's out posting Instagrams of him going golfing with Kevin Millar. A lot of uproar. I've read a lot about it. A guy on CBS Sports had a very strong opinion that it doesn't matter that he was golfing. You know, it's not a big deal. It has nothing to do with it. And I say that guy is full of shit. You know what? If your job is to be a Major League Baseball player and you're not 100% healthy and you're going to go out golfing, I don't care what people say about that it's not that strainful for or stressful for your body. You know, Yoenis Cespedes is not exactly, you know, the poster boy for playing 160 games a year. So, you know, if he's going to do anything with torquing or moving his body that isn't fully committed to becoming healthy with that quad strain, I think it's a bad move by him. I think it's a bad move to be, you know, posting pictures about it, and not, I don't really care about that. The fact that he's doing it, I think there's a problem with it. Now he's going down on the DL. The Mets really need to make a run right now. They did get Jay Bruce, but, you know, Yoenis Cespedes is on the 15-day DL, and who knows if he's going to be there for longer.
Well, I mean, and again, he shouldn't have been playing golf. I agree with that. And you know what? I mean, but of course, that's probably why he's been with 7 teams in 7 years. I mean, you know, he's a guy that does things that are just dumb. I mean, that's not even a potential.
Right, and I mean, you know, he has put up some great numbers, but the guy has played for a bunch of teams. We got about 30 seconds here. Haven't really talked about divisions at all, but, you know, we got a close race in the NL West. Dodgers are 2 games back. AL East is still the closest division. We got Baltimore and Toronto at the top. Boston's 2 games back. Detroit's 3 games back. We talked about Houston. Miami, they're in second place, the NL East right now. That's something to say about the Mets. I mean, they're 8 games back. They're in third place. And the National League Central is becoming a blowout once again after the Cardinals made a little push last week to come within 5 games of the Cubbies. That's all the time we have this week, folks. If you missed the show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. That's it for me and Bubba, and we'll see you next week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.